Welcome to the Balanced Perspective Podcast, where we're going to be challenging perspectives on what it actually takes to become successful in business and in life every single week. I'm Terri Ann Richards, your friendly neighborhood serial entrepreneur and your guide to growing an impact-driven business, fueling both your community and your life at home. Enjoy this episode. Hey y'all, welcome to The Balanced Perspective. I'm your host, Terri Ann Richards, and today I am joined by Jamie Wolf. Jamie is the founder of the Million Dollar Story Agency, the creator of Overnight Author, and host of Million Dollar Pivot Podcast, where you can learn actionable and practical steps to push past barriers, roadblocks, and failures to achieve huge influence, impact, and growth in your business and in life. Welcome, Jamie.
You got through that all. That's amazing.
Thank you,
Terri, and I'm so happy to be here. It's great fun.
I'm excited. So just, I can't even imagine, it was just a few months ago that I had the privilege of being on your show. And so now the tables have turned and I get to interview you and I'm super excited.
Hopefully the world will not change as much in the next few months as it has in the last few months, because that would be just too much.
Totally. Well, it keeps us on our toes at least, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So what I really like about your story, I like the fact that your podcast and everything that you stand for is Million Dollar Story, but you're really focused on getting entrepreneurs or getting people to write that million dollar story, to write a book, because you really believe that everybody has a book in them, don't you?
I absolutely do. I think that even young people these days, so I don't mean to be ageist, but the longer you live, the more you have stories to share. And with world events, young people certainly have their share of stories, but stories throughout history have been the way that people have communicated, have carried on generational information, can share their legacies. And it's a really good way to relate. If I've had a win or a loss, like people like to share their wins and they're more reticent to share losses. But when you share losses, suddenly you normalize and humanize what's happening and you give other people courage to step forward with their stories and then you connect. So I believe stories are incredibly important to share, the bad ones as well as the good ones.
So what do you say to somebody? Because, you know, so I've written a book, as you know, and, you know, it's no small feat, but it's totally doable, right? But when I have conversations with people, people will say like, well, I could never write a book because I'm not a writer. What do you say to people when they say that?
Well, I'll keep it clean. So I'll say, of course you can. But call people out on that. So obviously there's lots and lots of different kinds of books, different kinds of genres. So specifically, I work with entrepreneurs. So I'm in the nonfiction how-to space, which is a very, very different kind of book than something about, you know, Dungeons or Dragons or zombies or, you know, some historical novel or poetry or things of that sort. So if we stick to just how do you write a book on teaching other people things, sharing your knowledge and your wisdom, building in story to that so people can see themselves in your story and your experiences and see how they can get from here to there. There's so many different ways to structure it. I have moved to helping my authors so they don't even have to write. So when you don't even have to write, you can definitely find time to air quotes write.
So nobody can see me right now. So I'm just going to explain to you. I just feel like my mind just blew. Okay, so help me understand how I don't have to write, but I get a book in the end.
Certainly. Well, you and I are proof positive that we're good at talking, right? And
true
so
that.
If you want to have a structured conversation, I approach it with either I provide a list of structured questions in a framework to authors. So if they want to, they can take and hint, hint. Now that you're hearing this information, you can go do this all by yourself without me. So this is good information for you. You can go take a walk, write out a list of questions for yourself that you think are important points to cover. Go take a walk, record, listen to it, maybe share it with someone else, have them listen to it, see if it makes sense. And then once you're happy with it, you can simply get it transcribed. Or I also meet with authors in this Zoom format and I ask a question, we have a conversation, we go back and forth with it, and then we transcribe those recordings. Now, to be fair, some people really love to write and have a cadence about their writing. They write often for their audience already, and their audience is used to hearing a certain tone and flow of information in written form. So for people who already write, to then read a version that's been a conversation maybe doesn't feel quite so much the same. And so sometimes we have to edit that a little bit extra. But for people who do not like to write, that talking is their jam, we transcribe it and then stick some kind of quasi ghostwriters on it. They're not starting completely from scratch, but they're starting from a version of recording and they ghostwrite and then we do some heavy editing. And then we put it all together so that it actually flows well. So it does take a little bit of magic, takes more work on our end, which is why it's a done for you thing.
Awesome. I think that takes definitely the excuse out that you can't in a lot of ways. So I get that a lot of the reason you write a book is there's power in story. So I understand that, but there's still either a time investment or a money investment when you're creating a book, right? What's the ROI, or what's the business, the business sense behind writing a book when you're a coach, a consultant, an entrepreneur in some service-based industry? What's the actual reason why we write a book beyond the fact that we know that when you write a book, you could create impact on people? What's the actual business reason you write a book?
Before I answer that question, I'm going to go back to your brief reference of, you know, you either spend time or you spend money. Of course, my computer crashed in the midst of a launch for some of my authors. And so when I took it, you know, mask on and trying to find a place that's open and still being able to buy and get delivered in a timely fashion, parts and pieces for broken down sad computers. I went in and they had a sign saying, well, you can get this done cheap, or you can get this done fast, or you can get this done right. Pick two. And so I really, really loved that because, you know, if you start saying, oh, I don't want to spend so much money, it's like, okay, you know, either wait 16 years or, you know, get it done tomorrow, but good luck. You might be back the next day. So anyway, that just always keep that in the back of your mind when you are exchanging. Everything has an opportunity cost. Basically, I learned that in statistics in graduate school. Everything's got an opportunity cost to it. And so you just have to decide what's most important and relevant to you at the time. How do you as a business owner or person want to spend your time staying in your lane or, you know, learning a whole entire new skill like writing, publishing, and marketing a book? So now to answer your question, what's the ROI? It's been interesting because, you know, my superpower is writing and publishing. So when I first started working with entrepreneurs, I dismissed their concerns that writing was hard or writing took a long time or writing was intimidating or overwhelming. Pshaw, writing is easy. What are you talking about? So I learned that was not the best approach to not listen to what the market was telling me. And so in understanding that it's just the thing that I can do simply, I also started listening to people say, look, if there's five of us all lined up in a row and we are all fitness trainers or we're all Facebook ads people or we're all into getting real estate leads for people, if we're all excellent at what we do, there is no differentiator, maybe other than price, and you don't want to be a commodity offer. So if you can claim that you are a published best-selling author of a book, that immediately grants you status, authority, influence. When people are simply running down the list, ooh, they're going to stop and pause. This person is, you know, a published best-selling author. she or he must really know what they're talking about. They must be trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Trustworthy is another thing. When you're publishing in a book and it's something tangible or it's on a Kindle and you can read the stories of this person, you start to relate to them better. You get a sense of who they are, what their integrity is like, what their you know, value system is like. And not everybody is going to align with me through my story, but the people that I, you know, want to attract or who would really enjoy working with me, those are going to be the people who gravitate to you through your story. So it's a great way to really get your ideal client. Mm-hmm. And then with the way I help people write books, and to be honest, a lot of other people now help people write books this way too. So I am not the end all and be all. But when you are looking for someone to help you write a book, make sure that they help you strategize so that you are creating evergreen leads. Because once it's out there, it's out there. And so if there's always a strategic way to bring people back to you and let them enter your world, and then you can start nurturing them, now you're automatically growing your client list. There's more ways, but those are a few ways to start with.
Now you're speaking my language. I love evergreen. I love the fact that you can do all this effort and all this work, and then once you have sort of this model that works, you just kind of go over there and passively make me money.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It is so part of the goal. Yes, absolutely. Okay, Jamie. So I'm loving what you're doing today, but I'm always curious of how people got to that point, right? Like there's always this backstory that's like, you know, a bunch of weeds and trees and rivers that people have to go through to get to right now. And so I want you to kind of share maybe a little bit of your journey of how did you get into being, you know, the woman behind people writing these best-selling books? What's the journey to get you there?
Thank you for asking. I will do my best to keep this short. Again, I've had a lot of years, so I've had a lot of stories. But the one that probably most directly got me to here is that my middle child, who is hardly a child anymore, but she will be forever my middle child, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when she was 10 years old. So I was working in corporate. I had a regular job. I'd gone to college and graduate school and climbed the corporate ladder. I was just doing what we were supposed to do until this life-changing event that I had absolutely no control over happened. So she ended up in intensive care or ER first at 2 o'clock in the morning of Thanksgiving morning, US Thanksgiving morning, and then in intensive care when she was 10. So as a parent, you would do anything you could to protect your child or keep them from that kind of harm. And it turned our worlds upside down. So fast forward a little bit where we were living when she was diagnosed, there was spectacular care, really good doctors, lots of attention paid to her. I was very comfortable. But a few years later, we moved. And we moved to a place where there was not good care. It was my first understanding that we had gotten really lucky the first time around, but that's not the case for everybody everywhere. And so being a problem solver, I went, what can I do about this? So long and short, I ended up helping to co-found a medical device disease management company. Had no idea what an entrepreneur was. Don't think I'd ever heard the word before. I just knew my daughter was sick. I needed to help her. How could I do that? And of course, from a business perspective, is there a demand? There's lots of people who have type 1 diabetes. There's even more who have type 2. There's all sorts of people with all sorts of other chronic diseases. So creating something that got through FDA clearance in 18 months, traveling the world, fundraising, running clinical trials 24/7, that was my new identity. And it all started because I just wanted to help my kid. I was a mom helping her kid. Entered into, you know, the lion's den of this world of entrepreneurship and investors and big money and clinical trials. I had beginner's luck to get to a certain point, and then the rug got pulled out from under me. So at the time, I was married, not anymore, to a person who was the CEO. And that was the only person with the ability to fire me. So I got fired. I was the only woman in the company, the only woman on the board. The person doing the firing was my husband. Long and the short of it was everything changed again for me. I found out that our bank accounts had been closed down. I found out I didn't have a place to live. I found out it got very ugly. You know, there was children in custody and all sorts of awfulness involved. So I crawled under a rock for a little bit and cried, but I was a mom. And then at that point, a single mom no longer had an identity, a title, or income. And so I couldn't stay down. I simply did not have that luxury. So I had been bitten by the entrepreneurial bug. I went to work in economic development. I'd never heard of that either before I went to work in it. But I have since learned that economic development exists everywhere. It is designed to bring in jobs to cities, counties, states, regions, countries. So the economic development group that I worked with was specifically tasked to bring in warehousing, manufacturing, and distribution, but they didn't have anyone who was an expert in the entrepreneurial space. So I became director of entrepreneurship to work with the hopefully scalable tech companies. If that sounds like jargon, it just means someone with a good idea. You know, think of software. You know, you have one piece of software, it's super easy to replicate it and distribute it to hundreds of millions of people. So that's the idea behind scalable. So what technology could be rapidly scaled so that there's money, a good return for the investors? So I worked with the startup companies to help them tell their story, you know, perfect their pitch to investors. And then I also worked with the investors to understand all of the things an investor needs to know, due diligence and valuation and all sorts of stuff like that. And then discovered we didn't have quite enough money in our region. So started working with different groups to pair them together called syndicates. But here's the real answer to your story is I said the same things over and over and over and over and over again. Depending on who was asking me, I had the same set of answers. So I thought, I know, I'll write a book. So I just put all the information in a book and they'd ask me the questions and I'd hand them the book and go, here. But of course, what many authors learn is getting a publisher is a bit challenging. So I decided to simply leapfrog that. And I didn't just self-publish, I created a publishing company. So then I published through my own publishing company and I started helping other people publish as well. And that introduced me to the next big learning curve, which is, yeah, writing and publishing is one thing. Marketing and selling books is a whole entire different beastie that I hadn't known existed. And so that led me down the rabbit. It's just like Facebook, you know, one rabbit hole to a next rabbit hole to a next rabbit hole. That led me to the rabbit hole of learning online marketing. And that brought me to today.
Wow. You know what I love so much about your story? There's so much with your story that I can resonate with. And it's like, I don't know how many times you can have a conversation with an entrepreneur. It doesn't matter where they are in the world. It's like they get an idea and they go, yeah, I'll try that. It's like, yeah, sure. You know, I think back to when they used to have like vinyl letters on the walls. Like people used to put things like, you know, dance like nobody's watching on your walls. Well, I used to buy these like they were, you know, like penny candy. Like I couldn't get enough of it. And you could only find black and they only came in like boring fonts. And I thought, screw it. I'm going to create a company where you can customize it and you can choose any color you want. I didn't understand anything about graphic design. I didn't even know what a freaking plotter was. I went out and bought the machine and started a company within a week. And it was very successful. I ended up selling it and making very good money. But it's like, that's the kind of stuff that just, that's what separates entrepreneurs from everyone else. And it doesn't make entrepreneurs better. So I don't want anyone thinking that, but it just makes them like, they're just willing to do things they've never done. Like, I love the fact that you were like working in corporate, have an issue as a mom, going to solve this issue, going to go into like medical tech stuff, like going out and chasing investors. And then, you know, okay, that doesn't work. Marriage done. You know, I'm actually reading a book right now called The Power of Broke. And I can't remember who the guy is. He's the founder of FUBU. sucks that I can't remember his name. Sorry, buddy. But he's on Shark Tank. But he says, like, there's something really powerful when you don't have everything handed to you. There's something really powerful when you're kind of between a rock and a hard place. And so whether it's, you know, you're down on your luck with money, or, you know, you have something like a family member that really needs you to show up, there's something about that, that you're kind of like, it's like poker. You're like, I'm all in. Right. And it's
absolutely,
it's do or die, balls to the wall, whole way in.
I think there's something a little bit helpful at first about naivete, that I just didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't ever think I jumped. Now, I've had lots of conversations since then about, are entrepreneurs risk takers? Well, maybe first-time entrepreneurs who are simply addressing a need, solving a problem. But I think after we've been in the world for a little while, we are actually very good risk calculators, so that we really understand very clearly what we're getting into and what it might cost in time or money or outcome. And we're very results driven. So we're going to track and we're going to measure, and we're not going to do anything that we, you know, don't have a good idea of where it's going to begin with. The other thing that I learned in my first foray is that, you know, it can be a little bit heady to be in the tech space of entrepreneurship. And because things were falling into place, because I think it was such a personal journey for me to do something for my child. And then, you know, I don't remember this saying, this is the day to not remember things, but something about, you know, once you commit, you know, all sorts of things open up to make it happen. Yes. And so when I committed to doing something for my child, all of these crazy doors open that let me go as far as I went until it didn't. And even that was an amazing learning journey, except that I didn't know it at the time. I was just embarrassed. I was humiliated. I was alone. I was scared to death. I was broke. And those are all things that sometimes our egos don't let us talk about until once I started talking with other entrepreneurs, once I really got into the entrepreneur space, that too is a story that every entrepreneur has. I am not all that. I am not original. Everything I did wrong has been done many, many, many times before. So I think that's the other really, really important part, and why I'm so driven to share stories, is to make sure that somebody out there going through it now who feels alone and ashamed and stupid and like the dumbest human who was ever invented, you're not. We've all been there before. And so it's important to share stories, so that we can see ourselves and others and have faith that we're going to get through to the other side and be okay. Mm. And can I go a little further on my $1 million person?
Okay. Of course you can.
The reason that I call my agency $1 million story is twofold. One is, I want all entrepreneurs, but women especially, to think on a bigger scale. You know, I came out of tech, I came out of scalable tech, multi-million dollar investments, multi-million dollar revenue. And then as a solo entrepreneur, we tend to think, gosh, if I can just make, you know, $500 or $5,000, that is a good start. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying be greedy, but I'm also saying, please allow yourself to dream bigger. A $1 million revenue company is not a big threshold. It's absolutely possible. And then you go on from there. Once you've learned the skill set to take you to a million, you've got a lot of the skill set to take you to 5 million, 10 million, 25 million. You don't do it alone. It's a great way to understand how to build teams, how to find mentors, how to find people who are going to open doors and walk with you. But the $1 million does refer to, let's go for $1 million first. Let's allow ourselves to think about that. But on the flip side, even if you don't have that revenue mark hit yet, our stories are $1 million stories, because the richness with which we learn and the way we share, that is absolutely a $1 million story. Whatever has happened to you, wherever you are financially, if you're bold enough and courageous enough and humble enough to share your story, you have a $1 million story.
Oh, I like that. I think that there's so many golden nuggets here because I think the reality of it is, and I think this is why you're so passionate about talking about, you know, limiting beliefs and failures and roadblocks and all of the stuff that for those who have yet to have that big, epic, you know, quote unquote failure, you know, it's scary, it's daunting. And then you meet somebody who's been there, done that, because they've shared their story, and you realize, oh, they're still standing. They just pivoted and did something different, right? But they're still standing because the DNA, the makeup of that human still exists. You were not defined by your role in that startup. You're defined by the person that you show up as every single day, right? And your story just helps to evolve you into the person you are each and every day, right? So I love that you're attached to pushing people to share their story because there is so much power in that. I wouldn't be the person I am today if people didn't share their stories, right? Like I remember when I went bankrupt at 25 years old and this older gentleman took me aside and was like, I think he said like, welcome to the shoulder chip club. I don't even know how he put it, but it was just like, welcome to the club, kiddo. Like you finally did it. You failed. Like welcome in. Here's the pearly gates.
I think that I had read somewhere in the past in Forbes or Entrepreneur or something like that, that in Silicon Valley, you basically are not going to get funding unless you've already failed because they are aware that you're going to be a riskier investment if your ego is not in check. If you still think you're just going to have this meteoric rise. And I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's not likely. Because you just don't know what you don't know yet. And that can be a good thing, but it can also be the thing that trips you up when you just right when you least see it coming. And it's usually people. It's usually the relationships with other people, the strategic partnerships. Unfortunately, it's usually people and you have to get better intuition or radar or due diligence. Or a better lawyer in understanding in understanding how to go.
But there is a quote out there, and I don't entirely remember it. This really is the day of just not remembering, folks. I have never put myself out there as someone who has a great memory, so do not quote me exactly. But I think this might be from Choice Theory, William Glasser. But it's like all problems are relational problems. So like at the crux of most of the issues in the world today, it has something to do. Well, people, relationships, and communication. So if we can figure that stuff out, we might just be okay.
Hey, planet, we're working on it.
So here's a question for you. You know, I'm always interested in knowing, you know, if you knew then what you know now, you know, what's the advice that you'd give, you know, younger Jamie?
I think the word I keep falling back to these days is grace. I think I was very, very hard on myself. I look at young people today and it feels to me like they've got the weight of the universe on their shoulders that they think they have to be so careful and make the right choice, choose the right direction, do something now that's going to affect the rest of their lives. And sure, to some degree it will, but I think giving myself when I was younger, giving yourself, all of us giving ourselves a little bit more grace to understand as long as we are taking action, that is worth everything. You know, yay you took action, you screwed up, it didn't work. It's okay. Give yourself some grace, go do it again. You know, it's like practicing on the piano or practicing a dance move or something. You're going to fall a bunch of times. You're going to play four notes at once and it's going to be horrible, but go try again until it becomes habit forming, until your body and your mind learn the rhythm, and then it's going to be okay. I think so often we freeze when something goes badly wrong. In fact, I'm reading a good book right now and I don't remember the author's name because I'm horrible at that, but it's called Psycho Cybernetics. It was originally written in like the late 40s, early 50s. A new edition has come out with some new added information in it. But it's the idea that so often we are influenced by stories that we hear when we're young or labels that are put on us. You know, the classic example is somebody doesn't do well in math when they're 8 in second grade. And so they get, their teacher says, oh, Johnny's bad in math. Teacher tells parents, parents believe Johnny's bad in math. So Johnny simply accepts that label because he's 8 and he doesn't have perspective. And he goes through years thinking, I'm bad at math, only to discover one day watching a problem on the board, and this is all coming out of the book, this is not me making it up, one day to discover on the board, there's a problem the teacher can't solve, the other kids in the class can't solve. Johnny can see it very clearly. Johnny knows the answer. Johnny says, hey, let me solve it. Everybody laughs. And then he goes and solves it and has that success and that awakening to, huh, I'm not bad at math, and goes on to be an engineer. So I think we have to be super cognizant, you know, and me as a parent of adult children, I'm recognizing now things that I said or events that happened that I didn't know would carry forward for decades with my kids, them thinking I judged them, or, you know, even me with my parents who've been dead for a long time, me thinking they judged me and I just wasn't good enough or worthy or deserving. If any of us could do anything about that and just go, oh yes, the heck you are deserving. Absolutely. We are all designed to be successful. It's got different meanings for absolutely everybody, but we are all designed to have a glorious existence.
I think there's so much power in the words and the stories we tell ourselves, right? And that stuff that we take on, you know, from 5 years old and 10 years old and 15 years old, and, you know, you're 40, 50, 60 years old, still walking around with the same story from 12 years old. And, you know, to your point in this book, lo and behold, you actually are good at that thing, or you are worthy of success or great relationships. And so I think, you know, you need to check the stories that you're telling yourself and ask yourself, are they serving you to the positive, or are they taking away and putting you to the negative, right? Very powerful. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
So, okay. I'm always curious to sort of ask this question. It's one of my favorite questions. I ask everybody this question. What does perspective shifting mean to you? What does it mean to shift perspective?
I had a coach whose favorite phrase was, it's not hard, it's new. When I carried the perspective that I couldn't write a book because it was hard, or I couldn't write a book because it would take a long time, or I couldn't write a book because who am I to write a book? Who's going to listen to my story? If I let go of that perspective and simply shift perspective, I'm now viewing this conversation at a different angle. Writing a book maybe isn't hard, I just haven't done it before. Claiming my status as an author. I remember before my very first book, I pretended, or I would say out loud to myself in the mirror, I'm an author of a soon-to-be-published book, because I'd never been an author before. And that just sounded so big and so scary. And I was like, now I've written dozens of books. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm an author, so what? Not to minimize that. But, you know, that whatever the hurdle is that you haven't done before, it can be show-stopping until you shift your perspective. And if the shift is, it's not hard, it's new, or let's just say this happened to a friend of mine, a bad breakup, and that sense of, I'm never going to recover, I've been rejected, my world is over, I thought this was the one, it was going to be amazing, feeling badly, feeling badly, feeling badly, the whole world is calling. And then one day, I'm good. Is it too soon to be good? So it was a simple shift in perspective of, hey, wait, maybe I'm just fine by myself. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I wasn't rejected. Maybe this was just the universe getting louder and louder and louder that I had, and I am not talking about me, but that I had buried myself and lost myself to be something I wasn't, to be in a relationship with this other person. And so suddenly I found myself again and went, wow, I'm back.
Jamie, I kind of feel like you're talking about me. I was kind of weirded out for a second. I was like, are you talking? Jamie, have we had deep conversations while I was sleeping about my past life? Because this is starting to sound a little bit like me over the years. Oh, gosh. But there's truth in that, right? I think it's, I like that quote. It's not, what would you say, something,
it's not hard, it's new.
New. It's new because everything that's new seems hard and seems scary, to your point, writing your first book. And then you do it and you're like, oh, that wasn't so complicated. Or starting your first company, hiring your first staff, whatever it is, you know, going on the first date after a breakup, like all of those are hard and scary and intimidating. And then you do it and you're like, oh, I'm still standing. This is okay. And then you can do it again and again, and it gets easier. So I like your take on perspective shifting. Okay. Awesome. So last and final question. I'm curious to know, how do you set up your mornings? You know, I'm reading a lot of books these days on, like, what the heck do you call them? Like success principles or like morning regimes. And man, I hear a lot of people about, like, you got to get up at 5 a.m. You got to do this. You got to do that. So I'm reading all sorts of books. And so now I'm just going to ask people on my podcast, how do they run their mornings? And then, you know, then I'll surmise what I really want to do with my mornings.
I have often debated about answering this question, honestly, because I feel I like all you those should, things as well.
This is a show called The Balanced Perspective. Your perspective matters, Jamie. So if you say completely, you know, F-bomb, the blah, blah, blah. I don't even know why I just said F-bomb on my own show. I usually swear, but I said F-bomb, so that's okay. Today, I am being light, guys. But, you know, speak the truth, Jamie. Tell me what really happens in your mornings.
So, on occasion, I will be inspired or guilty, usually motivated by guilt, that I should, you know, do the meditation, do the exercise, get to the gym when they were open. Drink god-awful amounts of water first thing on an empty stomach, or, you know, forego coffee or whatever. And it usually lasts 2 or 3 days. And I go, I like the way I do things. I do get up really early. I am a morning person. I always have been. I also have a lot of animals and they're kind of in a pattern. So they get up early. So I kind of don't have a choice. But I will get up. I will have coffee. Oh God, can I really say this out loud? I come back to bed and I watch Netflix for like 20 minutes. And then I get up and I get dressed and we go to the dog park. And so I spend about an hour outside with the dogs. And so that is a routine, to be fair, even though the dogs think we're going for them, it's because there's two people at the dog park, a husband-wife team that are always there at the same time. And we have lovely conversation for a half hour or 45 minutes with me occasionally remembering to throw the ball for the dogs. And then I come home and I do chores and I have some breakfast, and then I usually am working by about 8. But I have tried journaling. I have tried listening to meditation things. I have tried taking ice cold showers. I have tried taking, you know, again, drinking a lot of water on an empty stomach and foregoing coffee. I am a coffee person. I love my cup of coffee, and I justify my Netflix by saying it's story, it's character development. It is inspiring me to remember the human side of everything. That's how I justify my 20 minutes of Netflix in the morning. And every once in a while, it's a little longer than that, but I'm, you know, I go back to bed and the cats all pile on top of me. So I also justify that this is my time, that I'm awake, that they're getting love and attention. That's how I start my morning.
I love it. Thank you for being so honest. So right now she just covered her face. Nobody can see you. Just me.
I know.
But I'm just super curious because, again, you know, there are so many books on setting up your mornings, and, you know, I'm similar to you. My natural morning would be get up, have a coffee. I usually, like, literally put on my woolly socks, summer or not, and take a blanket and lay it over me on the couch. And then I read, and I might get lost in a book and read for like a freaking hour, or I might only read for like 10 or 20 minutes, but I love reading. And then I usually go for a walk or go do something, but all the books I've been reading lately are like, you got to do this, you got to do this. And so I'm like, okay, screw it. I'm going to start asking people that I respect on my show, how do they run their mornings? And I want to know what people are really doing. Like, tell me the truth. Books sound way too perfect.
I think that there is a lot to be said for setting the tone, or if your mindset is still in a bit of a shaky place, to read inspirational or encouraging things in the morning to remind you that you're okay, to hear you know, just something uplifting. I'm not a faith-based person, so I know a lot of people start with faith readings in the morning. And, you know, if that's the thing that aligns with you, it's probably a wonderful way to start the day. I think when I was younger and I was balancing work and younger children and not great relationships, that then I needed the routine and the discipline a bit more. I needed to hit the gym and just get the angst out with my physical activity and my body. I needed to make sure my energy levels were super high. So nutrition and hydration were really important. And nutrition and hydration are still very important, especially in this time of making sure our immune system isn't compromised by much. But as I've gotten older, I don't have young children in the home anymore. I don't have anyone to answer to besides me. That whole idea of giving myself grace, I give myself permission to take it down just a notch. Could I build, you know, a $50 million company with what I've got going on and have 60 or 100 employees? I could. I don't want to anymore. If I were 20 or 30 years younger, maybe I would want to. But because I have allowed myself to tone down my drive a bit, I don't feel guilty. To be honest, you're the first person I've outside that I've in the business world. Now everyone listening, oh well, will know. But you know, it's the first time I've acknowledged that I am not the rigorous beast thing in the morning. I do work really hard. I work really efficiently. Let me put it that way. I work efficiently.
But I think there's something important to that. I mean, I think for most of what the media pushes towards entrepreneurship, and I mean, I use these words a lot too. So hustle and grind and all this, but there's sort of this picture painted in most people's head that you need to be putting in, you know, 60, 70, 80 hour weeks, and you need to be, you know, missing your kids' soccer games, and you need to be, you know, up till midnight and up at 5 a.m. And, you know, and I used to believe all of those things, and there was a lot that I missed out on, and a lot of things that, you know, if I could do it over, I'd do it a hell of a lot different. But I do believe that there's something important about having a morning regime that's, you know, in alignment with you. And, you know, and I think that's it. I think some people who live that 60, 70, 80 hour a week are like waking up in the morning, like bad out of hell, negative mindset because they didn't sleep well the night before because they're in a worried or scarcity state. They're, you know, they're stressed out about, you know, the dollars in the bank account. They didn't make it to their kids' play last week and they're just running. I think there is some validity to putting, you know, to your point, like some structure to their mornings so that they can chill and calm and set the intention for the day. I just finished the book, Miracle Mornings by Hal Elrod. I actually remembered that. That's actually really good because he doesn't seem like so in my face. He's more like, this is why this is important, but you kind of set it up the way you want to and you wake up when you want to, but I suggest you wake up an hour earlier than you normally do so you have time for you. And I was like, I like the way you're coming at me, Hal.
Absolutely. And I do, I am a voracious reader. I always have been. So just because I don't read first thing in the morning, I do read a lot because it is the thing that I love to do. And I've always got two or three books going at a time. And again, it's mindset, you know, at different times when I've been more afraid or less confident or had other things going on, I needed the rituals and the routines to lean on. Now, every single morning, it is my first thought. So maybe that is a conscious thing of joy. I just have so much joy. I have so much to be grateful for right now when I know a lot of other people have challenges and issues and real hardships that are going on. But I choose intentionally to feel joy, to see joy, to experience joy, and to decide that I'm going to focus on that and feel that in my day. And then I go have my coffee and Netflix.
Oh, I love it. So Jamie, if I have people that are listening and they want to get more of you, where can they go? What can they do? How can they hang out with you, Jamie?
Oh, thank you. So a great way to find me is milliondollarstory.co. So even I forget once in a while and put an M on the end of it, but it's milliondollarstory.co. or they can find me on Facebook. So I have my personal page is Jamie Wolf, and then I have a $1 Million Story page as well on Facebook and Instagram and, you know, Twitter and all of that.
And but all of the
I hang out mostly on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Okay. Perfect. I'll make sure all of your links are in the show notes. She as well has a podcast, folks. It's called The $1 Million Pivot. It's a really good podcast. I was a guest on it. She asked some really awesome questions. Great interviewer. I really appreciate you, Jamie, for sharing your truths, sharing yourself, getting real and authentic here with me. And I wish you all the success, and I appreciate you.
Terri-Ann, thank you so much. It's always a blast to speak with you, and I appreciate the authenticity and the knowledge that you bring. And thanks for letting me go on and on about storytelling. And all of y'all who are listening out there, it's time to share your stories.
Awesome. Thank you.